This is Mae Brussel. It's broadcast number 681, December the 24th, 1984. This is side two of this tape. John Singlaub on the board of Western Goals, a warrior from guerrilla tactics and warfare in Southeast Asia and around the globe, particularly in Southeast Asia, working with the Pentagon, having a meeting with the Pentagon. He set up his own institute in Colorado, and the institute is run by Mr. McCall of the Soldier of Fortune. And Soldier of Fortune, of course, has G. Gordon Liddy to their conventions, and Gordon Novell, and the late Mitchell Werbel, and the various far-right savages, I call them savages, of our spy systems, all coordinated and working together, and all part of the Permandex operation. I'll get back to the OSS and the Permandex, the OSS-CIA Donovan connections, because all of these people are a product of it. And I have to take the current news and show you how they're acting in the present as well as in the past. Now, this article goes on. The Washington Post: Singlaub met with the Defense Department in May of 1984 to study the wars in Central America and offer advice on U.S. military history. Now, if you think of the failures of what these military men and retired intelligence and generals have behind them, what they've done with a dictatorship in Bolivia, and what they've with Mr. Balazar before the current government changed hands, and that will be out by May or June of 1985, the relationship with the cocaine king in Bolivia and the Nazis there, and the relationship of Singlaub to Southeast Asia and Nguyen Han and the dope pouring into this country, and the fascism in Taiwan, and the policies of this country, they have been a failure in so many countries, and all of a sudden they become experts on military history at the Pentagon. Nation magazine ran a story by Peter Stone on this meeting in May, and he said it was held at the request of Fred Ickley, the Undersecretary of the Defense for Policy. Singlaub, plus many veterans of the guerrilla warfare of the Philippines, Korea, and South Vietnam, included retired General Edward G. Lansdale and General H.C. Anderhall. I know Charles Beer's hair will stand on end when you understand it, how much he has studied Lansdale, and anyone who wants to know the policies of Southeast Asia, you study Lansdale. So here we have Lansdale, the Soldiers of Fortune, which are the private armies, then the Singlaubs, who are, again, the secret private armies, then with the Defense Department that are over armies but are doing actions that are not allowed by Congress. So really, they are a government into and by themselves. There's no other way you can slice it. In the book Deadly Deceits, Ralph McGee discusses just a little bit about Lansdale. I can cite many, many stories about him. But because he is advising on guerrilla warfare in the Central American, remember, Henry Kissinger, their buddy, and the armchair buddy of all these fellows, went over to Central America first and put suggestions into order that they're working on now. In the book Deadly Deceits, it describes how the OSS during the war, the office of OSS, the predecessor of the CIA, and this again goes back to Donovan, before there was a CIA and Donovan was the head of the OSS, had agents stationed over with Vietnam, and they worked in cooperation, the Vietnamese, with the OSS, and the OSS gave them weapons and ammunition to train the guerrilla into an organized army. And once the Japanese surrendered in August of 1945, these people thought they would be free and have a democracy for the first time. And by 1945, Vietnam was for the first time in the history free of foreign domination. Then when the French begin to pull out, the Americans come in and take over, and the U.S. policymakers decided the French lost their will to fight in Vietnam. The Vietnamese helped fight the Japanese and wanted their own country. So the French say, well, we'll get out now. They want it, and they fought against the Japanese. So the French get out, and lo and behold, in comes Mr. Diem, handpicked by the National Security Council August the 20th, 1954, and it cites the example. Diem was supposed to broaden the governmental base, elect an assembly, and take over. The French are out now, and the Diem is going to be there in Vietnam, just building up to our friend Mr. Lansdale. Once the decision was made, overnight, the CIA intelligence had to decide on the situation in Vietnam the French would be out. The decision is made. We'll take over. Let's put in Diem. Diem now was portrayed as the miracle worker who was saving Vietnam. To make the illusion a reality, the CIA undertook a series of operations that helped him turn South Vietnam into a vast police state, from the democracy to the miracle worker. The purpose of these operations was to force the native South Vietnamese to accept the Catholic Mandarin Diem. And here's Donovan, the importance of the Vatican, being knighted by the Vatican, the military order of the Vatican, the soldier, the sovereign military order. That soldier says, we'll put in a Catholic, Mr. Diem, and make a police state. If you don't want to be a Catholic, you'll have a police state. So Diem, through Donovan, and then Mr. Casey, his protege also, and many of the CIA that were Knights of Malta, but particularly Donovan's hands over there in Southeast Asia, they made Diem a head of the Catholic Mandarin, and he was selected by U.S. policymakers to provide an alternative to communism in Vietnam. If you don't want the Russians, if you don't want communism and divide up the property, take our Catholic puppet, Mr. Diem. McGee says it was a strange choice. From 1950 to 1953, while Ho's forces were earning the loyalty of the people fighting the French, Mr. Diem, a short, fussy bachelor, was in the United States at the Mary Knoll Cemetery in New Jersey and New York. Raymond Donovan, Secretary of Labor, studied at these Catholic places and wanted to be a priest. Mr. Diem was at the seminaries in New Jersey and New York as a good Catholic. Diem arrived in Saigon in mid-1954 and was greeted by Colonel Edward Lansdale, the CIA man in South Vietnam and the head of the agency's Saigon military mission. Diem was opposed by virtually every element of South Vietnamese society. And this is so important because we're going to let Mr. Lansdale and Mr. Singlaub and these various people from Soldier of Fortune decide for these poor people down in Central America who will run them and who will run their countries. And if they don't take who we want, we'll split their bellies open and pour the salt in and gouge out their eyes. Mr. Lansdale decided every element of South Vietnamese society, Bao Dai's followers, the pro-French religious sects, the Buddhists. Baodai was the one who had captured their interests or mind. His followers were the pro-French, the religious sect, the Buddhists, the remnant nationalist organizations, and, of course, followers of Ho Chi Minh. He had no troops, no police, no government, no means of enforcing his rule. But what he did have was the complete support of Colonel Lansdale, who came in and had all the money and all the manpower and the weapons and training and propaganda and the political savvy in the CIA's covert action chest, and to create Diem's government, to take over then from those followers, to create that. Lansdale was behind operating teams in North Vietnam. He stimulated North Vietnamese Catholics and the Catholic armies to desert and come south, and the teams would be promised Catholic Vietnamese assistance out of the Vatican and new opportunities if they would emigrate, and to help contribute to this, they would tell the people up north. They had brochures that they handed and leaflets they passed out telling them that the Viet Minh, what to expect of the citizens in the new government, that they attributed to the northern Vietnamese what was going to happen to them if they stayed there. So they appealed to the Catholics to come down, get support, fight the army, do any lies you want, and the covert action began. Now, that is Mr. Lansdale, just one little page on a long career, sitting there in the Pentagon with General H.C. Anderholt, A-N-D-E-R-H-O-L-T. Eight people met in the Defense Department in May of 1984, and they had a decision to move from the conventional warfare in El Salvador. The conventional warfare has only killed 50,000 so far and kept the property in the hands of those 14 families. But they're going to improve and increase the emphasis on psychological warfare, civil action, and break into small units. Anderholt heads a 1,500-member Air Commando Association at Fort Walton Beach in Florida. And so they came in to advise them, what you need is what Soldier of Fortune shows in their magazines month after month, what Mr. Brown pushes, what Mr. McCall pushes, what Mr. Singh Lao pushes, all tied together and working in the Defense Department and having their own Institute for Regional and International Studies in Boulder, Colorado. And they're going to get the Defense Department to do what Congress doesn't want to do and emphasize which kind of weapons is transferred for other ones. And the article goes on with the kind of weapon substitute, which is technical, but which is ridiculous. And one of the points of this article is that they're going to send in medical supplies for these people, that this is all humanitarian. Now, all you have to do is take the people that we're meeting and take what they've published and take where they've lived and use the examples of the countries they've been to. And you know there's more than medicine and food and clothing going on in this operation. Now, they went on to say they've raised millions of dollars, Mr. Anderholt, and the Defense Department, in quotes, hasn't helped much because of congressional opposition, but they have offered to help them in some ways. Their big problem, they say, in quotes, is the liberals in Congress. You see, the bleeding hearts and the liberals would ruin everything for them. Now, Singh Lao has another organization. He has many of them. I have his name on many, many groups where he gets help from the Pentagon. He has the Institute for Regional and International Studies in Boulder, Colorado, on how to use these other types of warfare. That's one group that's formed now. And the other is the U.S. Council for World Freedom. And this, admittedly, in the Washington Post, received substantial coordinating help from the Pentagon. So tell me the difference. Why not just say the United States is at war against the Nicaraguan government, declare war, which we really have done, but we hide it through these various organizations. It's so insidious, the way they hide the operations, and yet in a way they're not hidden. They're in the newspaper, but Congress seems to not be able to put the brakes on, because when they vote no, you've had enough, or no, Mr. Duarte still has all these massacres or death, no, we don't like what's going on, we want some accountability, well, then they have meetings at the Defense Department between McCall and Singh Lao and Lansdale, and all the sleazy rot from the last years that's been going on, last 20 years and before. But obviously what they did in Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam is a horrible mess, just as these Middle East advisors, Henry Kissinger, helping Middle East and Asia, now Central America, Middle East is a mess of what's going on with Syria, Iraq, Iran, and Lebanon. All of our policies, these have been failures. These advisors are mentally sick. They are actually psychologically sick. And what's more sick is that they always get together to think who they can ruin next. And they don't look back and realize who they're hurting or how they're hurting. And they're just drunk on their own power. And because these people go beyond the reach of what Congress votes or wants, you can't say enough about them. And I have many, many articles on this gang, but they are a threat because, again, when America has food riots, when there's unemployment, if the banks collapse, if there are people gunned down like Mr. Berg, the radio announcer in Colorado, by one of their cohorts and buddies, if the Klan and the Nazis had taken Dominica, and the fact that they failed doesn't mean they won't take other islands. When these people work together and have everything else they want, there's only one thing left, and that's America, the United States of America. That's us. Keep looking at us, because these people have our tax money. They have the approval. There's no brakes on this car. This motor is going fast down the hole. And the same sleazy characters who should have been removed after Vietnam for the Agent Orange, for the Phoenix program, for the tiger cages, for the torture, they should have been retired and sent to some kind of a funny farm and bring in new people, because the old way didn't work. It bankrupted us. Our people from Vietnam are divided. They're sick. They're drugged. They fill the prisons. They have nightmares and diseases from the chemicals that were there. Why is it that they are allowed to come home and put on their uniforms again and go into the institutions that we have here and start all over with another piece of territory, another country, and break it up until, as I say, nothing is left in America? Then they'll be sitting in the Pentagon, as they have already, with the garden plot and their FEMA, the federal emergency, to decide then what to do for us. They already have their chain of command ready, and then we become the final and the last victims. and someday maybe the Soviet Union will have to free and save us before they can be free to fight those people that will take control and have control of our government. We may be rescued by Russia someday, so don't be too hard on them. Now, getting back to Donovan and the roots of this disease, we're talking about the overt cancers on this body politic. That's what John Dean told Nixon. Those messages didn't last too long. People don't remember that part of it. But where did the roots of this come? This Donovan of the OSS with the Vatican written in the book on the Armageddon. How about Donovan, the OSS with Southeast Asia? Going back to a few pages on Donovan and the control of news media and propaganda and the power, and to remind you of his work with Rockefeller Institute, with Herbert Hoover, and then with J. Pierpont Morgan, and then forming this OSS, continue with the line of thought. Then he went to England to William Stevenson and Intrepid and merge the intelligence mind control programs, the psychological warfare, and the British intelligence with the United States intelligence, plus the Vatican sovereign military Knights of Malta to represent the Vatican interests at the same time. These pages are from 124 to 126 that I'm referring to in the book by Corey Ford on Donovan the OSS. It says, in Washington, D.C., in the building, the National Health Institute, the institute was evacuated and moved upstairs, and in that building, the COI was born, the Office of Coordinator of Information. Coordinator of Information, the COI, was born. Down below the National Health Institute, which is a marvelous place for Donovan to be, because when World War II was over and in the OSS, he was put on the board of the American Cancer Society. And I cited just last week, 2 weeks ago, how our government tested giving live cancer cells to people to spread the disease, not to cure. In those buildings, the National Health Institute, they were moved upstairs. Donovan's Office of Coordinator of Information took place, the headquarters for Mr. Donovan. It started during the wartime with radio broadcasts against the Nazis, and the certain people from the government decided that they would study the broadcasts and counteract them for what would eventually be like Radio Free Europe or Radio America, the propaganda media, or to counteract German and Japanese propaganda at the time. It started with radio broadcasts against the Nazis, and then it grew to combine independent news networks with the War Department. And I'm just reading again the book on CBS, the origins of CBS, and the roots of these new networks, how they were independent stations, and then to grow to be these networks. After December the 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor, the independent American broadcasting industry, the ABC, NBC, CBS, the independent American broadcasting industry that was not linked to the government or the military agencies, became, in quotes, more cooperative with Donovan, who was working as an American agent. Robert Sherwood, the playwright, worked for Donovan in the OSS, and he had a falling out over Donovan because he felt that the director of the COI, the Coordinator of Information, shouldn't be against Franklin Roosevelt. He hated Franklin Roosevelt. He hated the New Deal. And he felt that it wasn't right to have somebody is in charge of this like Donovan. Roosevelt appointed him, but it was probably the pressure from the Morgans and that put him there, you know, in that position, strategic position of the OSS. But Sherwood objected to the appointment of Donovan. At the same time, he had been appointed the director for Foreign Information Service when they were just forming after Pearl Harbor. And they used the powerful NBC antenna from New Jersey to Paris. And that's how the networks became part of the War Department and have stayed that way ever since. And the CBS transmitter was on Long Island. And this book says, Colonel Donovan believed that once a state of war existed, the propaganda arm should be exploited as a weapon of deception and subversion and should be under the military supervision. And there's a letter in this book to Franklin Roosevelt that Donovan sent. Now that we are at war, foreign propaganda must be employed as an instrument of war, a judicious mixture of rumor and discretion, and mixing truth as bait to foster disunity and confusion in support of military operations that you use rumors, you use deceptions, and not much description, mostly deceptions, and truth, a little bit of truth to bait them, give them a little bit of truth, then whammo, break them up. And the main purpose is confusion in military operations. And he felt that propaganda is an arrow. This is Donovan. Propaganda is an arrow of initial penetration in preparing the people of a territory where the invasion may be contemplated. It is the first step. Then comes the fifth column. Those are the people inside the government that are going to make it collapse from underneath and working with the press. The press comes in there and works with them. Then the militarized raiders or the commandos, and those are your special forces, your soldiers of fortune, your Green Berets, and so your Rangers. Finally, the invading divisions when you bring in the whole bang and group. Nothing has changed much, even with the Grenada invasion. They did this kind of thing, the confusions, and the students needed rescuing, and the papers saying they're in trouble. They're American students that may be hostages, and then in come the commandos, and finally the troops come in, and that's the way it goes. Now, Robert Sherwood objected the tactics of Donovan that he wrote in, this was in March of 1942, and he told, this is what he told Franklin Roosevelt, and this is very important to the matters we study now. It seems a long time ago, 1942, but it's pertinent today, and Robert Sherwood wrote this. He said, propaganda broadcasts should stick scrupulously to the facts and let the truth prevail. The American image overseas would suffer if we emulated the Axis and it resorted to lies and deceits. The American image would suffer. The agency of news, of propaganda and communications should be under civilian direction and not be a supporting arm of the military establishment, which Mr. Donovan wanted, because in time it would become an American Gestapo. This is Robert Sherwood, the well-known playwright, wrote The Petrified Forest, one of my favorite stories, or plays. Okay, he is saying that propaganda should stick. If you want to tell them, propaganda doesn't have to be a lie. It's something you can say over and over again, like, if we win the war, we will give you all of you housing, or we'll give you clothing, or we will have full employment. You don't have to tell lies about your enemy. Tell the truth of what would happen if you win the war. What would be better? He says, when you emulate your enemy and their methods and you resort to lies and deceits, it is a problem you will always suffer and never get over. The agency of news, propaganda, communication should be under civilian control. I'm repeating this again, civilian control, because it should not be the military branch of the establishment, which Mr. Donovan wanted and which Mr. Donovan got, because in time it would become an American Gestapo. Now, when Mr. Truman didn't resign, he was out of office, his time was up. When he stepped out, he referred to the American Gestapo that he had created when the CIA was formed in 1947, literally the Gestapo. When Eisenhower left, he talked about the military industrial establishment. The military establishment is what was referred to and the Gestapo by this well-known playwright objecting to the Mr. Donovan's tactics. And remember, at this time in 1942, Mr. Donovan had Mr. Morley on from the Vatican and had another purpose that he was serving, the Vatican Church, and he would be knighted for it. And he would do things that Rome wanted that were not what the American government wanted, but were okay for the Crusades and the Inquisition. It was okay for them, but America had our share of problems with slaves and the blacks and the Indians, and to bring in possible Inquisitions later or Gestapo is something the United States does not need and didn't need. Now, this book goes on. Colonel William Donovan, during World War II, kept working with the government agencies, and at the time, in the news media business, there was a proliferation of government information agencies. He was working with them. There was the COI's Foreign Information Service, the one with Robert Sherwood, the OFS, the Office of Facts and Figures under Archibald MacLeish, the OGR, the Office of Government Reports, the OCD, the Office of Civilian Defense, the OEM, the Office of Emergency Management. Now, these communication agencies in 1942 to 45 were getting $30 million a year of government funds. I heard somebody saying on a talk show this week, you shouldn't object to the nuclear arrangements that Ronald Reagan has because he was elected by a majority. And that is so wrong. He was elected by a majority. But the problem is that the majority were only given the information that the ABC, the NBC, and CBS, or Turner Broadcasting gives you. And it is all controlled, very heavily controlled. And these people already were mingling with the government way back then. And it's hard to get decisions or facts to the American people with this kind of money, $30 million of government funds, into the controlling of literally the minds of the people or what they're to know at that time. Now, it goes on that facts were elaborated and distorted. Some things were taken from Mr. Sherwood's office, the Foreign News. Editor Barnes selected things of interest. He handed them to writers and researchers. They were put on a private teletype, and they weren't exactly what he said. Facts were ingeniously elaborated or distorted, just like they are today. You can say the Russians have X amount, 10 times more than we have. You can say that down in Grenada that Mr. Bishop, Maurice Bishop, has an airstrip solely for the purpose of Russia invading Central America. Facts were distorted, elaborated, and taken from the Foreign Office and given to other people. In other words, what Mr. Sherwood sent in wasn't what they got out. In June of 1942, Mr. Donovan left his Washington offices, and all these men with their $30 million in media linked up to the major networks, and went to work with Colonel Menzies and Mr. Hambro and Lord Mountbatten over in London. And this is very important. And by order 9182, they created the OSS. In this OSS, it was formed as soon as he gets to London, and it was a more informal organization at the time of Pearl Harbor, with the British intelligence, the secret British intelligence, the special operations executives from London, Mr. Hambro, Menzies, and Mountbatten. Names very important to the future. They created the OSS under the direction and supervision of the Joint Chief of Staff of the United States Army, and they would take over the coordination of information so that the Joint Chief of Staff and the coordination of information, that office, then began to be in the hands of the Army with all those millions of dollars of propaganda. The civilian aspect was swallowed up by Pentagon Order 9182 that created the OSS. All the clear white propaganda was handled by the Office of War Information, and all the lies, all the covert information, all the black propaganda was under William Donovan's OSS. The green light, the presidential order for the lies, was given to Mr. Donovan, who 2 years later would be knighted by the Pope among 100 special people, and then come home and form the CIA. So this is the transfer, a very important item of the transfer of the news media that first begins as one branch and then mingles with the networks, our major networks, and then goes under the umbrella of the Defense Department when OSS was formed, 9182 order. It was to collect, analyze strategic information, and here in quotes was one of the things that Donovan wanted. In quotes, to enforce our will upon the enemy by means other than military action in support of actual or planned military operations, including unorthodox warfare, guerrilla activities, resistance groups, subversion, and sabotage. The director of the OSS would be William Donovan. And here is the seed, the roots of what was planted for Southeast Asia then in 1945 and 1954 with Mr. Lansdale and Mr. Singlaub and all these people working. Mr. Donovan is dead, but Mr. Casey, his protege, is our CIA director. And they sit there now and plan unorthodox warfare, guerrilla activities, resistance groups, subversion to enforce our will upon the enemy. And we, or they, decide who is the enemy. We have declared war against Nicaragua because they didn't like Somoza, our West Point graduate. We declare war against the native populations of these various countries, against the poor masses of El Salvador. If the majority won the election here in this country, let the majority vote in El Salvador after you throw the guns away. So the point about Donovan is he combined these agencies. He took a grape, a trip to Great Britain. He used their British intelligence, melded with ours, as when Pearl Harbor was over. And this was the beginning. This was the roots. And then the man has the influence of his Knights of Malta to go in and out of the Vatican to snitch on the priests, to snitch on the nuns, to force the lower echelon of the poorer Catholics to shape up to whatever fascist government you want them to obey in, to not think for themselves. It's no different than Jonestown, Jim Jones. People ask about cults. These religions are cults. You take orders. You call the head man father. Yes, father. He becomes your father, replaces your natural father. And then you are allowed to do what is black propaganda, covert operations, guerrilla warfare, breaking down resistance groups, subversion and sabotage, which includes bombing places and blowing up, like the Bologna bombing, the train stations and the tunnels where people are killed and mutilated. Well, our time is up now. This is the end of this broadcast. We can't stretch this tape anymore. But Donovan and the roots of our agencies are important, and how they operate are important, and how they are working today in the Pentagon in Central America is terribly important. The bloodshed just keeps rolling on and on. It had a beginning, and hopefully it'll have some end. This is Mae Brussel. I'll be back with you next week. You take care and have a good year that is coming along pretty soon.